Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
All this week, we're talking about privatization in America. Today, the military. At times during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, private defense contractors hired by the Pentagon have outnumbered U.S. troops on the ground. Demand for military contractors surged with those wars, and the U.S. military has come to depend on them. But what impact has the boom in private defense contractors had on our military? Joining us now is Molly Dunnigan, who's an associate director of the Defense and Political Sciences Department at RAND. Molly, welcome. And first of all, how long has privatization of the military been around?
So this is actually a phenomenon that has been around for thousands and thousands of years. Hmm. The oldest recorded use of mercenaries in war was in 2094 BC. It was more a norm to see private forces for the majority of the time since that period than it was to see state-run forces. It really actually took up until the end of the French Revolution, so 1815, for there to actually be more of a development of state-run militaries that were the basic standard. So really, up until about 2003, that was the norm.
And a big uptick in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, right?
Yes. So we saw a little bit in the Gulf War and Desert Storm, the first Gulf War. We saw a slight increase in the use of contractors, mainly for base operations, support and maintenance in the Balkans in the late 90s. But then, yes, in 2003, we saw a huge ballooning of the industry, primarily in Iraq, but also in Afghanistan. That has since declined somewhat with the drawdown of forces in both theaters, but majorly really sort of changed the industry. And I think for the most part, some of those things are here to stay now.
And what's the advantage? What is the case that is made when the government decides, you know what, instead of doing this in-house, we're going to outsource it?
Sure. So there are several things. The first is flexibility. Contractors can be called upon fairly quickly and have forces ready to go that are trained and equipped for the most part. And then the second is that they're force multipliers, so they can easily add more boots on the ground. It depends on the theater and the status of forces agreement that they have in that theater, but sometimes contractors can also get around force management levels. So there are certain caps put on the number of military boots on the ground in theater, but not necessarily on Department of Defense civilians or contractors. And so you can actually add more bodies to your force without actually reaching that limit.
Now, accountability is a big issue when it comes to contractors. And one incident stands out. In September 2007, Blackwater private security contractors killed 17 unarmed civilians and wounded 24 others in Baghdad in Iraq. What happened there, and how much did it have to do with the fact that it was a contractor? And did it change anything about oversight?
Great question. It's still a little bit unclear what happened there. There's a lot of what we call the fog of war surrounding that incident. Essentially, they were in a traffic circle in Baghdad. These were security contractors that were working on a diplomatic contract for the Department of State, and so they were protecting diplomats. They were in a convoy, so they were traveling through this traffic circle in Nisr Square. And it appears that a civilian, Iraqi civilian car had started to move. They weren't sure if it was an insurgent or not. It all of a sudden just escalated so that shots were fired amongst a number of civilian vehicles. And as you know, many were killed and many more were injured. It did change the level of accountability somewhat in that this was the first case that was successfully tried in the U.S. for contractors using the Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act. This is a U.S. domestic law that was passed in 2000 to try contractors working on overseas bases. But because these were U.S. citizen contractors, they were able to be tried under that act, and they were convicted. And so that does set somewhat of a precedent for utilizing U.S. domestic law to hold contractors accountable. Great question of whether this would have been different for the military versus contractors. I mean, The biggest distinction in this case, I think, is that the contractors in question had as their main goal to protect what they called the principal, the diplomats that they were protecting. And really, at that point, they're not concerned about sort of second, third, fourth order downstream effects of what's going to happen if they end up shooting civilians in the area. The military, on the other hand, is concerned about the larger strategic picture they're trained to be in. And, you know, it's part of U.S. military doctrine to think about winning hearts and minds of civilians in a counterinsurgency such as we saw in that conflict.
Well, also, there's a chain of command in the military. There's a code of conduct and laws that govern American troops on the ground, which I guess contractors wouldn't have to be part of.
That's a great point. Now, contractors are supposed to follow limited rules of engagement, but they differ at times from company to company. And so they, each company has somewhat different standards and are trained and vetting their contractors to differing degrees.
Are there any jobs that are considered off limits to contractors or I mean, other than maybe the Secretary of Defense, is there something that couldn't be done by a contractor today?
Yes. So contractors are technically not allowed to perform what are called inherently governmental activities. That term is defined somewhat loosely. It's a little bit of a nebulous term. But they are not supposed to be performing functions that are, you know, something that really should be done by government personnel, something like developing budgets, on the military side, you know, actually performing offensive combat activities, that is something that contractors are not allowed to do. They're only supposed to operate in a defensive fashion. Of course, you can quickly see how the lines become blurred in a case such as Nisar Square.
Are private contractors in general cheaper or more expensive than if the government were to just employ more soldiers?
You know, it hasn't been excessively well researched. There have been some limited studies on this. Honestly, I think it needs to be studied more comprehensively. The military has longer term costs in terms of sort of pre-deployment costs associated with training, equipping, and then post-deployment costs and sort of post-retirement costs, pensions. You know, the military has TRICARE, they have health care and full benefits. Contractors only have those things while they are actually deployed. So they only receive health care benefits while deployed. They don't receive a pension. A lot of them are former military, so they do still get their military pension if that's the case. But, you know, you're sort of paying a premium up front to bring in contractors who are already trained.
And the government is not responsible later on if the contractor gets PTSD or something, where if they were U.S. military, they would get, as you said, TRICARE. The contractor would not get that.
Right. So we did a study on this at RAND several years ago as well and found that the rates of PTSD among this population are surprisingly high. We found for the U.S. military, rates of PTSD range from approximately 8 to 20%, depending on how you're measuring it and what tools you're using to measure it. We surveyed a sample of 660 contractors, multinational. A large proportion of them were U.S., but we had 25 countries representative in total. And we found that they were screening positive for PTSD at a rate of 25%. So it was much higher than what we see amongst the military. And more troubling was that we found that a lot of these folks were seeking help for PTSD or reporting any symptoms of PTSD was highly stigmatized for them. A lot of these folks were screening positive for it and were afraid to seek help. They were afraid that there would be repercussions from the industry, that they would not get another contract, that they would lose their job, essentially, and their livelihood.
So, Molly Dunnigan, do you think that military decisions are being made differently because of all the privatization that has occurred? Has it changed the way that we fight wars? Has it changed people's minds about which wars to fight or anything like that?
There have definitely been arguments put forth that the ability to utilize contractors somewhat quietly can give a country and a government plausible deniability when going into a new theater of war. So putting boots on the ground somewhat covertly, they don't necessarily have to be identified as U.S. boots on the ground. They don't have to be authorized by Congress. Another way in which they've changed the face of warfare, and this is more in a tactical sense, we saw, for instance, in 2004 in Fallujah, there were four Blackwater contractors that were brutally murdered by insurgents who attacked their vehicles. This actually has been shown to have totally changed the U.S. military strategy with how to deal with Fallujah and caused the Marines to go in and attack Fallujah much, much earlier than they had originally planned. It really revised their entire strategy. So yes, I mean, the short answer is yes, that contractors definitely do impact how we fight wars and the decisions that are made about war making.
So listening to everything that you have said, it doesn't sound like people have taken President Eisenhower very seriously when he warned about exactly this.
It's a great point. I mean, I think that one of the big reasons for the ballooning of the industry is that we are under an all-volunteer force, and we have been since the end of the Vietnam War. And so that really does limit us in terms of the number of military we can recruit, and contractors help to fill in the gaps above that and allow the United States to perform strategically the way it feels that it needs to.
That's Molly Dunnigan, who is Associate Director of the Defense and Political Sciences Department at RAND. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.